Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket Weekly Podcast in association with Charles Tirrett. Believe it or not, it's the 8th of December already. If you want to get dressed up for all those Christmas parties, Charles Tirrett more than have you covered. If you're really keen to make an impression, you should check out their dinner suits, or if, like us here at Wisden, our Christmas party is a bit more low-key, Charles Tirrett have also got you covered with patterned shirts, polos, and maybe even a cheeky jacket to sharpen up the outfit. Check out the collection online at charlestirrett.com, and don't forget to use our special code WISDEN22 to get 20% off. We'll leave a link in the description and a reminder of the code there as well. Anyway, on with the show. I'm Yaz Rana, and with me today is Ben Gardner and Katia Whitney. We'll be talking a little bit more about the Pakistan-England series, focusing on what went wrong for Pakistan, before taking a look at all the other cricket that's gone on in the last 7 or so days. We'll talk about England's low-key ODI series in the Caribbean, Marnus Labuschagne's latest home masterclass, assessing whether or not Bangladesh are genuine World Cup contenders. We'll be picking an all-time England Bazball 11, and we'll do a bit on the controversy around David Warner's leadership ban, as well as some county news. Let's kick off with Pakistan then. Ben, we didn't spend that much time on them when we did our show reviewing the first test match, but there were a lot of curious selections, and with the focus on England, those selections have gone under the radar a little bit. They were arguably quite a long way off the best side they could have picked. Four debutants: Zahid Mahmood's not even a regular for his stateside, Mohammad Abbas and Hassan Ali, who the latter of whom is likely to get a recall for the second test. Those guys have got two really good overall test match records, and they're out of the picture with a bunch of uncapped guys favoured instead. And that feels a bit harsh, and quite often we're critical of England being overly loyal to players, but Abbas and Ali haven't really done that much wrong, and that Pakistan attack looked really weak in the first test.
Yeah, it's funny, because we wrote a piece on the site about what Pakistan did wrong, and there were a couple of comments being like, isn't this harsh? They were quite close to saving the game. But I think on a pitch that flat, it had to be really quite bad to lose it, basically. As good as England were, and you shouldn't take anything away from them, they executed that game plan so well. I think that, and I mean, even looking at that first innings score, right, just looking at what they did wrong in the game, they were 400 odd for three. And then at that point, you should be thinking like the game should be absolutely safe here. And so even from then, 570 odd, that's a bit of that is undershooting what they should be getting from there, I guess. Looking at those bowlers, so yeah, they're both slightly curious cases, I guess. Hassan Ali, obviously, he was amazing last year, averaged, 16 with the ball, I think. But this year, he didn't go well in the games he played. He also just didn't play very much, so it's hard to know what's exactly going on there. So he played four tests, five wickets, 67, playing in five white ball games. Obviously, wasn't a part of that T20 World Cup campaign. He wasn't very good in the Kaidiyazam Trophy either. He took 14 wickets at 40. So in a way, I'm surprised it's him they've returned to rather than Mohammad Abbas, who's still only 32. He's not that old.
And he's only played 3 test matches in Pakistan. So if the idea is that he's not good in those conditions, that's a bit unfair to come to that conclusion after so little cricket.
Yeah, and he had a decent campaign in the Qadi Azam. He didn't play that much, but he got 18 wickets at 24. That's good. He was obviously really good in the County Championship again. 50 wickets at 18 for Hampshire in Division 1. He did... Obviously, his overall record looks really good. That's obviously... it's a bit pushed up by how good his start was. And he did fall off a little bit, but still. So he averaged, 40 in 2019. And just above 30 in 2020 and 2021, which is not... You know,
it's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, and you'd think you just need some seniority in that attack. I think the attack for the first test combined had fewer test wickets than Joe Root.
No, that's true. Yeah,
which is not a great place to be. And yeah, and then the other guys are Abra Ahmed, who is by distance the leading wicket taker in the QEA, 43 wickets at 22. Next best was 31. So he was by distance the leader there. Mahmood was 13 wickets at 46 in the same competition.
And they're on the same team, and Mahmood didn't get in it.
Yeah, and I know we talked a bit about Abra Ahmed, and we were saying, like, we're not sure if he looked like, it's not like he was ripping it lows, but I also think that actually that kind of sort of stump to stump, lots of googlies, that actually could possibly have quite a lot of success against the way England are batting. So yeah, the team selection is odd. I think, to be honest, the thing I'd be more concerned about though is the overall mentality that kind of seems to surround the Pakistan team. Like, if you look at the players they've got, they're not very far at all from being a properly serious test side on paper, right? Like, Babar Azam and Mohammad Rizwan, we know they're both brilliant. Abdullah Shafiq looks really, really, really good. Shaheen, I know he's injured, but he's obviously brilliant. There's lots like about Nazim Shah. When you look at the core of that team, there's maybe only a few players away from having seven players they can really sort of count on, and that is kind of what you need to be a good test team. You wonder where Shadab Khan is in all this. I mean, he's one of the best white ball arounders in the world.
Done okay in his brief test career, but hasn't played for a couple of years.
36 with the ball, 33 with the bat, but just hasn't played very much test cricket either, yeah. I'm surprised they haven't had a look at Mohammad Herrera, who's really young. He's 20 years old, but I've watched him on a couple of streams this year, which is that the coverage of that tournament, by the way, is amazing. And he looks really, really good. He's been the leading run scorer in the last two Qadi Azam trophies.
He's
20 years old.
Pakistan under 19 did really well for them.
Double 100 in the final of that competition this year. He's got a triple 100 to his name. He's Shoaib Malik's nephew, if that makes a difference or anything. But so to get back to the mentality point though, they should have the ingredients to be a really good team. And yet it feels like when teams like Australia and England show up, they're kind of just happy to sort of compete for enough of a game before kind of falling away. I mean, Ramiz Raja said as much when Australia turned up and they rolled out those really, really flat wickets. He put out a statement basically saying that they couldn't beat Australia on anything, or they couldn't compete with Australia on anything other than really flat wickets. And you're kind of like, what? Why are you saying this? Australia at that point hadn't won a series away from home since 2016, I think. That should be a team where you can kind of prey on those, on that kind of that psychological blockade they had over winning away from home. This is an England team, sure, they'd won 6 out of 7 coming into the series, but before that they'd won 1 out of 17, and this was a first test away from home, and they gave them, in a way, the perfect conditions for that strategy to work, and that only England could have won that game playing the way they did in a way. And so if they kind of just, I feel like they just need to back themselves. It's so odd considering they seem like they have such belief in themselves in T20 cricket, how they can be so different in test cricket. It's odd. And I guess that, you know, the good thing about Pakistan cricket, you're never that far from an upswing.
One minute down, 1 minute up.
Exactly. What's it? Qudrat Khanazim or Nizam? Is that the thing? One of the coaches said during the England series, it basically said it's dependent on nature, like it's out of our control, essentially, which at the time he was sort of ridiculed for, and then became kind of a motto of their T20 World Cup campaign.
I mean, it really wouldn't surprise me if it won one in 6 days' time.
Yes.
Katia, Ben talked about Mohammad Herrera, this batter who scored millions of runs in domestic cricket, who a lot of people are like, why isn't he in the team? I guess for someone to come into the team, someone needs to come out. And one of the curious selections has been Azhar Ali. Obviously, he's been part of the Pakistan team for years. His role in the team, not that straightforward now.
Well, he's had a really odd year. He got dropped for one test match. So I guess at the end, it comes back to what Ben was saying about mindset. So he got a really big 100 at, surprise, surprise, Rawalpindi, against Australia. And then in, I think it was Lahore, he scored another, a big innings, not 100, but a big innings. And then after poor results against Sri Lanka in the first test, he got dropped for the second test, which I think Pakistan then lost anyway. And then he's back. But if you look at his numbers, he averages over 40 this year still. Big credit to the first innings, which I think was 185. And then in the last 3 years, he's also averaged over 40, which isn't that bad. It's quite good, really. And if you look at that top four, and you've got Shafiq, you've got Imam, and you've got Azhar, some scored over 7,000 runs, and you've got Bubba, that looks actually like a really, really good top four. It's just a bit of a weird one. I don't, like, he's not the reason why they're losing. They get themselves in really good positions, like Ben was saying, and then they just lose. Yeah. It's nothing to do with Azhar at three. It's nothing to do with having a lack of talent. It's just some kind of block or barrier or something.
Yeah, I guess his selection shows the modelled thinking in the same way that Hassan Ali's gone from one of the best bowlers last year to out of the side, out of the squad, and then might be straight back in. Azhar Ali, they obviously thought something wasn't quite working for them to drop him two tests ago, and he's straight back in.
Well, he did have that really lean period after they came to England, where he lost the captaincy quite harshly, in my opinion. And then Bubba had the captaincy, and he went, I think, 18 innings without scoring 100. But over the last couple of years, he's not really been that bad. He's not been bad enough to say he's the root of all their problems, basically.
It's interesting you say they should be more like England. Ben mentioned Shadab Khan. I do think when you're seeing Zahid Mahmood struggle that much on debut, Shadab Khan, also his batting brings so much to that side as well. He'd make them so balanced. And part of the reason why I kind of thought England were going to win on that last day was, like, look at that tail, Nasim Shah at eight. Just having someone who can bat at eight would make quite a big difference. Shervo asks, would the pod like to apologise to Will Jacks, please? The lad got a 6 foot on debut. The last time that happened for England was in 2003. The last time it happened away from home for England was 1976. Yep, I do stats now. Ben, we talked about Jacks. I don't think we were that critical. I think we said that we praised him for his economy rate, being able to bowl 40 overs, especially for a guy who didn't bowl in first class cricket a year ago. Do you want to explain why we weren't potentially as effusive in our praise as we otherwise would be for a guy on debut taking 6 wickets?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, it would be quite a boring show if all our analysis was just purely based on
the number of wickets.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this guy played the best innings because he got the most runs, and this guy's the second best, and that sort of thing. Will Jacks, I really, really like Will Jacks as a player, and he makes loads of sense in this England side for this series. And then even then, he's overperformed expectations. I think I said in a previous show that there's a scenario where he could average loads with the ball and not very much with the bat, and still have really done a job in this side. And if England did win the series, you could say that he had a good series even in that case. And he's obviously overperformed that. I don't think England would have expected him to take 6 wickets. However, I mean, if you look at what the 6 wickets were, this isn't a guy, he didn't run through Pakistan anyway. He deserves credit, obviously, for keeping on bowling when, you know, he was, when everyone was going for lots of runs and there was no breakthroughs coming through, and he bowled tightly enough, and he got the rewards in the end. And I think the thing is, it's my point was more just because Phil said, can he fill that Moeen Ali role? And it was more just people not underestimating what Moeen Ali was to this England team for quite a long time, in terms of, like, being able to take wickets when conditions weren't helpful and batters were really good players with spin. That's something that very few players in history have had. Jacks we don't know yet. He might improve to be able to get that ability, possibly. And Gareth Batty did compare him to Moeen Ali from the start of the summer. And there have been just the odd hints at time at the Oval that he's been able to get that, like, that real action on the ball. But even if he's not that, like, not being able to be as good at Moeen Ali as taking wickets, that's something that's true of absolutely loads of players. You know, Will Jacks showed a bit with the bat that he can score runs. But I think if Jacks is to have a long test career at the moment, unless England sort of redefine the role of what a spinner is in test cricket, which is possible, it would be as a number six who is bowling a bit here and there. But that, I think, he is easily capable of doing that. But based on that debut, I'm not seeing a spinner who is sort of going to rip through sides, I guess, which I still think is fair, even though he took 6, I think.
Yeah, and also I would say, though, that it's not as if England have loads of spinners who can rip through sides. Mm-hmm. And I think I agree with everything that Ben said. What I would say, though, is if he, over 3 test matches, does comparably to Leach, which he did in the first test match, it's possible that England look at it at the end of the series and go, like, they didn't do that differently with the ball. This guy is a top 6 batter. Why not have him at 8 as well? So I think that's a potential way in. And I think that's probably what England are looking for, given that they selected three spinners who batted eight, who bat eight in the squad in the first place, which is, as you said before, a very niche role to give yourself that much cover for.
Well, it's quite a good job, isn't it? Because he came into the series as the fourth choice spinner, yeah. Because Joe Root was second choice spinner.
Yeah, he's done quite well already. Before we move on, some James Anderson stats to warm the soul. So in the last 11 years, he averages less than 24 in Asia. So only Shami, Ashwin, Jadeja and Harath have more wickets in Asia at a better average than Anderson over an 11-year period. Since turning 35, he's taken 192 wickets at 21. For reference, in his entire career, Pat Cummins has taken 202 wickets at 21.5. Since turning 30, he's taken 404 wickets at 23.36, which would put him in the top 20 test wicket takers of all time. Dale Steyn, for reference, took 439 wickets at 22.95. So, yes, James Anderson, still very good.
So he's come in since he turned 35 and Steyn since he turned 30.
Yeah.
Which is yeah, good. Yeah. Yeah.
Then we got a great email in from Paul, who wrote in to say, I imagine that you're all enjoying the current successes the England men's test team are seeing out in Pakistan. It strikes me that a lot of their success is down to the mentality shift introduced at the beginning of the Stokes-McCullum era, rather than this group of players necessarily being known for playing an aggressive style of cricket anyway, and then being given a captain and a coach that finally unshackled them. After all, this is mainly a group of players who were generally quite unimaginative for the 17 tests beforehand. It got me thinking, there must be a swathe of former players who would dream to play in this team, who maybe weren't given permission to go out there and play with such freedom like this current crop of players are. So my question is, who do you think would make it into an England all-time Bazball 11? The likes of Peterson and Botham surely make it in, but Atherton must be outright. Food for thought, and thank you so much for all the brilliant hours of podcasting. Cheers, Paul. Katia, do you want to kick us off with some all-time England Bazball players?
Got to go with Flintoff, don't you?
Mm-hmm. He's in.
Yeah, classic. Players who would have thrived given the backing, Ravi Bapara, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Still needs another go. Who are we thinking? Spinners? Rashid?
Yeah, I guess, because there's two ways to go. Obviously. There's the white ball guys who you think... you know, Joss Butler as a keeper, opener, might be quite fun. I think that I've mentioned before and on the last show, but Moeen, I think, as in that attacking spinning role, never having to worry about containing, I think he would have really, really thrived. And then going back a bit further, if you're looking for guys who don't necessarily fit that sort of attacking mould, but do you feel in the right environment might have been more successes, you've got Mark Ramprakash and Graham Hick. Possibly are two names. Ian Salisbury as well, if we're looking for another leg spinner. Obviously, because the thing with Salisbury, and I think Phil's made the point before, people talk about Salisbury and they'll say Ian Salisbury was sort of like a failure at test level, and they sometimes might even just say a failure overall. And then you look at his first class record.
It's ridiculously good.
Yeah. It's, you know, 884 wickets, an average of 33. Like that, you can't call, that's by no means a failure. So he's possibly, I think, Gough would have just been fun. Obviously, that sort of likeable, gregarious sort of cricketer. And then going way, way back, obviously, you've got to have a shout out for Gilbert Jessop and his father's England Test 100. Percy Fender is one who, I mean, I've obviously never watched him play. but the description of him in the almanac are great, but he's just saying, like, this ball, this guy always hit the ball really, really, really hard and attacked whenever the situation, and apparently once hit the ball on the front foot over cover out of the oval, which is
struggling
which is
to believe that.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess if other things you're struggling to believe, there's also Albert Trott, who apparently is the only person ever to hit a six over the Lord's Pavilion. And again, there's not video footage of that either. So that's
can't imagine why.
Yeah.
Who are we giving captaincy to then?
I think Jessop. The fact that he's still so prominent all these years later.
Surely it's got to be Botham. That's the ultimate. Didn't back the story.
He didn't mention Botham.
12th man.
Obviously, KP, that was mentioned in the question. Yes. We're going to have Butler opening and taking the gloves. And we've not mentioned Ali Brown in a while on the pod.
Yeah.
So I reckon he'd have been okay.
I mean, Joss Gothic was really good. But
true. Joss Gothic probably fits the bill slightly better. So we've got a team of Joss Gothic, Butler, KP, Jessop, captain, Stokes, Botham, Flintoff, Sam Curran. We've got to have Sam Curran in there.
Yeah, Percy Fender would bowl as well.
Okay, so we get Percy Fender.
Yeah, and he's apparently catch flies at slip as well. So
actually, we've not mentioned Bairstow, who obviously gets in. So how about if we make the rule that they can't be currently
available for test selection.
Yes, so that means we can... So would we lose Butler then as well? Butler, which is a shame. But I think we do have a lot of batting in that team.
It's
but
a team
then do we lose
rounders.
Rashid? Is Rashid? He's not currently available. Mm. So that's fine. Rashid would be on this tour if he was available. I think people understand the spirit of the 11 if Sam Curran's not in it and Joss Butler is. That's fine.
Cool. Treskothick, Butler, KP, Jessop, Botham, Flintoff, Fender, Moeen, Salisbury, Rashid and Goff.
That's great.
With Graham Hick, Mark Ramprakash and Ravi Bapara on the bench.
None of those test matches are going to 5 days.
No,
It's funny because the England squad in Pakistan has three players in the number eight spinner role, and we have three players in the attractive but couldn't quite crack test cricket role.
Crucial. So. From Pakistan to the Caribbean, England are currently 2-0 up in an ODI series against West Indies in what is potentially their last ODI series before the Ashes next year. Katia, we'll start on the cricket itself before going on to the wider issues surrounding its coverage. What do you think England have learnt from the first two games, if anything?
I mean, it's tough to say nothing because they have won two ODIs, but some of the West Indies batting particularly has been questionable, should we put it that way? I mean, Lauren Bell did an absolutely fantastic job yesterday. I think she took 3 wickets in 8 balls, I think it was. And the West Indies were 6 down inside the first 10 overs. And she did bowl really well, to give her credit. But there were some god-awful shots in there as well. Hayley Matthews in particular is quite guilty of that. Bell was hanging it outside, tossing it up and hanging it wide, and they just went for it. So yeah, like, I guess in terms of learning how to win again, because maybe over the summer that's what they kind of got lost in, closing out those results and winning, particularly as an ODI side, that's a positive. But the West Indies are in a really transitional period at the minute, although it feels like they're ever in a transitional period. They've lost Dottin, and Stefani Taylor's no longer captain, and she's not selected in this tour. But I guess the positives come out of it, particularly in Nat Siver in the first game. She scored 90 off 96 on her first game back in the side, which is really, really good to see her back in the runs again. And a shout out to Amy Jones yesterday, actually. She played an absolutely blinding innings, her highest score since 2019, I think. And she came in under a bit of pressure as well. She hadn't really been great in the summer and she looked pretty uncomfortable given the captaincy. And I thought it was a really odd move, actually, to give her the vice captaincy again to this tour, but then I guess Siver will have that back when she's a little bit more settled in the side.
And then the big news is that Alice Capsey is ruled out for the rest of the tour with a broken collarbone and is a doubt for the T20 World Cup, which is absolutely huge.
Yeah, definitely. She's been so, so good ever since, well, beginning of last summer, really, in the 100, and then breaking into the England side this summer. How long do collarbones take to heal? Not that long, surely? They're quite a break, I don't know.
You're asking the wrong person.
But yeah, no, it would be huge, because they said she wasn't going to play the Under-19 World Cup, which she was eligible for. I guess now she can't play it anyway. Given that she opened in the match she did play, I'm not really sure what they were thinking her role was going to be. I think they were looking to experiment, and now they've kind of got to go back to their more traditional T20 lineup. But she'll be a huge loss, because she obviously bowls really well, adds balance to the side, and she's quite talismanic, and she's that big game player that you really want in that T20 World Cup. She's so young with no fear, and she could be that kind of player who just kind of galvanizes everyone around her. But yeah, without her for sure, it's going to be, well, hopefully not. Hopefully she'll be fit, because you want the most exciting players in the world playing in a T20 World Cup. But if she's not there, then that'll be a bit of a blow.
I was surprised that Emma Lamb was left out in the first place. I mean, she looked to me pretty good during the summer, obviously, like across all formats, really, but especially the ODIs and the tests. Mm. Why was that? And I guess what she's now back in, and is that just the Beaumont Lamb thing? Seems like it makes sense at the top. I don't know.
Don't know why she was left out. I'm on the same page as you. I think she sometimes gets left out undeservedly. She plays really well. She played really well yesterday, actually, when she did open, and then she got run out trying to get back on strike for the second, which was pretty stupid, to be honest. But she was playing really, really well, really fluent. And yeah, I think she is unfairly left out. In terms of the top of the order, they've got kind of a lot of openers. So Sophia Dunkley at the top of the order in T20s, which was the Commonwealth Games thing when they did leave Tammy Beaumont out. They've got Lauren Winfield-Hill back in the T20 squad after she scored so many runs over the last summer. Danny Wyatt as well, I guess they could put down the order, but then that kind of unbalances it with all-rounders, especially if Capsey's not playing. So I guess they've just got too many people who bat at the top of the order, and then without as captain. It was just, it was a strange decision, but they did say before the series that John Lewis did want to look at players in roles that he hadn't necessarily seen them in before, and this whole series is about John Lewis looking at players and John Lewis finding out what his best 11 is for the T20 World Cup. So I guess they're just experimenting, but yeah, it was a bit odd that Lamb didn't play and that Capsy opened as well.
Katia, it's just been a very difficult series to follow. Can you tell us first about what the level of coverage has been and then what you make of that?
I think there's two issues. So firstly, there's the coverage itself, which for those who haven't had the pleasure of playing Guess the Score on Sunday and last night has been pretty poor. So the first match, for a good chunk of the England innings, there wasn't a score up. And then when they did put the score up, it was wrong, had the wrong batters batting. And
so score up where? Just
on the screen. Yeah. On the screen. You know, so that was that. And then this feed kept cutting out because the BT using a stream from Cricket West Indies, which relies on bandwidth from the stadium in order to broadcast, which is clearly not there. Although I'm struggling to understand why at the Sir Vivian Richards Stadium there isn't bandwidth to broadcast it. But the feed kept cutting out. Pictures were blurry. Couldn't really see what was going on a lot of the time. The cameras were shaking like it was being recorded on. Like the camera they were recording it on had spent 20 minutes warming up kind of before they broadcast it. So it's been really tough to follow. And credit where credit's due, yesterday was marginally better in that the score was up from the start and it was largely correct. But I don't think we should be praising broadcasters for putting a correct score up on international cricket. And then you've got the issue, which has kind of compounded it, which is the tour got announced about a month, less than that, in advance of when it actually happened. So there hasn't, it's been kind of botched together at the last minute, and BT haven't got a team out there, and they've hidden the stream down on BT Sport 5, which I didn't even know existed. And I can see why, because the stream is so bad, you would want to hide that. There's no radio coverage in the UK, and TalkSport don't have the rights to it. So I don't know who has the rights for it, probably no one. So yeah, it's been really difficult. And it's really disappointing to see this level of, or this lack of thought go into coverage of a women's international series, which, you know, Sophie Eccleston's playing, Hayley Matthews is playing, and, you know, even if the players weren't as high profile as they are, that's not an excuse not to broadcast it properly. But, you know, it's the both sides' last series before the T20 World Cup. There's a lot going on. So it's kind of, you know, let's see it. Let's see what's happening. But yeah, it's been really difficult and a bit disappointing.
It kind of feels like a missed opportunity as well. You know, it's weird that this England side is breaking all sorts of records for attendances last summer, but also for next summer as well. And you'd have thought, and I know you're right to point that how late the tour was announced is a big part of this. This would have been a really good opportunity to kind of boost the culture of travelling support in women's game. Like, we know that the Caribbean is the most popular destination for men's tours. You'd think this would be a really good opportunity. And it's quite a big shame that it's been missed.
Yeah, well no one's going to travel out there with 3 weeks' notice. No one's going to be able to do that. Least of all with flights and expenses and organising a whole tour and that kind of stuff. And it's the same with broadcasting. It's going to be really difficult to organise that late notice. But you're right, when cricket's here and when it's breaking records and the ECB are, you know, shouting about that and saying, look how good this is, it's amazing. And that's correct, they're right to shout about that. But to sit back when your players are being misrepresented, on not misrepresented, but not represented to the standard that they could be when it's not your shiny product, it kind of doesn't sit right. You know, the ECB, Cricket Australia, all these people, they should be leaders in the world in making sure that women's bilateral cricket is going to be broadcast and going to be set up to succeed and marketed correctly. Because too many of these bilateral tours, the coverage just isn't good enough anymore.
Before we continue, here's a message from the Wisden shop. Prices on our Wisden ales that I'm showing to our YouTube audience right now are at an all-time low for Christmas, with up to 45% off on all our packs of pale and amber ales. Each can design features a different Wisden Cricketer of the Year. And genuinely, by chance, I just picked up an Ian Salisbury one. And for every can, you also get a collectible beer mat, which also has a Wisden Cricketer of the Year on them. You can grab these on sale now at the Wisden shop, available in packs of 6, 12 or 24. Wisden chalices and tankards are also available on sale as the perfect complement to our ales. You can grab all of these just in time for Christmas at wisden.com/shop. Again, we'll leave that link in the description.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Australia are 1-0 up against West Indies after beating them by 164 runs at Perth. Manus Labuschagne and Steve Smith both scored double hundreds in the first innings. Labuschagne then scored another 100 in the second. West Indies offered decent resistance with the bat. Craig Brathwaite scored 100 in the second innings. Tegnarine Chanderpol scored 96 runs across the two innings on debut. They did lack a bit of penetration with the ball, however. Ben, no surprises that Australia won comfortably. On Labuschagne, he's now the number one ranked batter in the world again, overtaking Joe Root. If you're going to believe the ICC rankings and the rating system, his rating points tally of 936 is now the 11th highest of all time, which is higher than de Villiers, Callis and Root ever got to. Pretty much the highest point Kohli and Richards got to as well. If they're to be believed, Labuschagne is properly in the all-time great category. All the names around him are that. How do you see that? And do you think that's premature with Labuschagne?
It's premature. I mean, I'm not saying that he won't reach that level. There's obviously he has had an extraordinary start to his test career, and now that he's 31 tests in, you're asking, or 29 tests in, you're asking, is it still a start or is it just his test career? I mean, the main thing is just that he is still yet to fully establish himself in overseas conditions, basically, which isn't all his fault. You know,
he's done well, it's just he's not been anywhere near as good as he's been in Australia.
Exactly. So he averages more than 70 in Australia, and then he averages around 40 elsewhere. I mean, and you know, he obviously made his name in that England series, and he averaged 50 in that series, but didn't make 100 in that series. He did get 100 in Sri Lanka. That was his first 100. He only did okay in that Pakistan series this year when everyone was getting loads of runs. So that, I think that's just the thing, is we don't really know yet if Labuschagne is in the Steve Smith level of all condition genius, or if he is kind of in that slightly lower rank of the batters the Australia have, who are still very good incredible at home and are able to do good things away, maybe sort of like that Usman Khawaja kind of rank, or if he is in that level above. And that's something we don't know yet, and he can score lots and lots of runs this summer, and it won't really say one way or the other, but he does have a huge year next year when they obviously play India in India, and then an Ashes and possibly a World Championship final as well. And so I think at that point you might have that Labuschagne has, you know, got 200s in each of those series, and you're like, right, yeah, this guy's really, really something sort of generational, or you're saying this guy's a very good batter. But not in that league, I suppose.
Mm. Just on Steve Smith, since he said, "I'm back, baby," whilst batting against England, he's hit 80 not out, 94, 21, 200 not out, and 20 not out. Yeah,
he's back.
Yeah, he is back.
And actually, he made a brilliant 100 just before that as well in Sri Lanka. So yeah, after having, obviously people didn't talk about it quite as much as like Kohli's lean streak, but having had a pretty lean time of it for quite a long time. Since the end of the 2019 Ashes, pretty much, and he had one test 100 in that time. He's coming back into form just in time for next year's Ashes. That's good.
Katia, Aryan asks, is Brathwaite the most informed test opener in the world? He's obviously been around for ages, but he's had a really good year for West Indies, who themselves have shown signs of improvement recently.
I mean, most informed test opener in the world. Did you not see Zach Crawley's 100 at Rawalpindi? Yeah, I guess so. He averages 73.88 this year in 12 innings, which is quite a lot. And he does kind of fly under the radar a little bit because he has had some pretty lean years, especially early in his career. And I think you made the point, Yaz, that he played test cricket way too early. I think he was 20 when he made his debut, 21, something like that. But when you don't have the depth of talent like the West Indies do, then you're going to end up playing cricket, test cricket, too early. There's that stat that he's the only opener to score a test 100 for the West Indies since 2013, I think it is. So he's clearly very, very good and in quite a bit of form at the minute. And when you look at his stats in isolation, they don't look that impressive. He's got an overall test average of less than 40. But when you take into context his career with the side he's been batting in, averaging nearly 40 when the rest of your side average about 30 is always more impressive than averaging 50 in a team that's full of geniuses. So yeah, if he's been he's really good, basically, is what I'm trying to say. And he's got the nice little stat of having batted with his current opening partner's dad as well, which is always quite nice.
That was nice. Mitchell Stark has now dismissed both Chanderpoles in cricket as well, which is quite cool. Ben, the other big news from Australia this week, if you ignore Justin Langer and everything that's going on there, is around the David Warner captaincy ban. So he put out a statement today saying that he's no longer going to contest that ban, saying that family is more important than all the stuff that might come out around it. It's not that straightforward, Ben, because it's not as if he's at war with Cricket Australia here.
No, it's a strange situation where what he's angry at in particular is the review process, which is kind of independent, which I suppose in some ways should be a good thing, right? You want things to be independent of a governing body who, you know, you might have people in there who have their own interests and political affiliations and that sort of thing in terms of who they want to see award things or not, and you don't want it to be like a PR decision or to be swayed by that sort of thing. So the independence is good from some point of view, but Warner was very scathing in his statement and seems to be supported by Cricket Australia in it. So he says that he wants to, that the council assisting in the review panel wanted to conduct public spectacle to, in the panel's words, have a cleansing, and then said, "I'm not prepared for my family to be the washing machine for cricket's dirty laundry," and also said that they sort of wanted to do a public lynching on him. So it's a really strange situation, and yeah, I guess because it had seemed like all the momentum was for David Warner to retake, for that ban to be lifted, and for him to lead Australia again in some capacity, whether just in T20 cricket or maybe even in ODI cricket, possibly in that World Cup. I mean, I know Cummins has been put in place as that captain, but wouldn't it be impossible to see that happening? And that now seems like it won't happen. So yeah, it's a strange situation. But that might well be the last of it, possibly. I mean, if Warren is just like not worth the hassle, and he is
36,
quite old,
yeah.
Exactly. So yeah,
it's 5 years, pretty much 5 years since Cape Town.
Couldn't have timed it better though with Steve Smith captaining them tomorrow in Test match.
That is true. Yeah, Steve Smith will be captaining Australia for the second Test match because Pat Cummins is out with an injury, and our good friend Scott Boland is back on the side for the first time since the Ashes. Reminder that he averages 9 in Test cricket with the ball. As of today, Bangladesh are 2-0 up in an ODI series against India. Both games have been really, really good. So today, Bangladesh recovered from 69 for 7 to post 271. Mehdi Hassan Miraz scored 100 from number 8. He was also the hero in the first game as well, hitting 38 off 39 as they won by one wicket. Yeah, this weird situation in this game where Rohit Sharma injured his hand, I think, so went off the field, and he only came in down the order, and he had to score 40 off the last two overs to get the win, and they needed 6 off the last ball, so he very, very nearly did it. But Ben, that is a massive win for Bangladesh. There have been loads of false dawns with them in limited overs cricket before the World Cup last year, T20 World Cup last year. They had loads of really good bilateral results, but in hindsight, they were all on very spin-friendly conditions that really suited them, that were quite different to what we've seen in the last two World Cups. But in ODI cricket, they've got a better record than they've had in T20 cricket recently. And this India side isn't at 100% full strength, but it's also still pretty strong.
Yeah, this is the first real statement, I think. And it'll be as much how Bangladesh held their nerve, I suppose, as much as the calibre of the option they'd be. I suppose if they had just smashed them, maybe you'd say that is proof that they're stronger. And, you know, relying on runs from Mehedi, who averages about 20 no-die cricket, you might say that's not the most sustainable game plan. The games are both so good, by the way. The first game was, you had a couple of screamers, you had like brilliant spells from Shakib Ebadot, Siraj Rahul at number five played a blinder, two lower order collapses, it hit wicket, there was a dot ball free hit with two runs needed, it was so good. But yeah, so how good are Bangladesh? I guess it is possible to quibble, like I sort of just did with this series. And, you know, they've got 12 runs from 18 in the Super League, but then you look at what those wins have been, and they've beaten Afghanistan, Sri Lanka and West Indies at home, and they've beaten Zimbabwe away, and they beat, again, a weakened South Africa side away from home. So you can just sort of say, well, they haven't proven themselves against the very best teams. This India win is a step towards doing that. And also, actually, if they are able to beat those sorts of teams in these sorts of conditions, that does make them semi-final contenders at the World Cup, I think. I mean, New Zealand won five games to make the semis in 2019. Bangladesh, I think, have that within reach just about. They need to play really, really well, but, you know, they have that sort of momentum with them. And then if you look at their players, I mean, Shakib is bowling as well as ever. He was absolutely brilliant in that first ODI. There was an arm ball to Rohit Sharma that he didn't read at all and sort of went through the gate to bowl him and then turn another one past the outside edge of, I think, Washington Sundar. No, through the, of Shardul Thakur to hit off stump. He was brilliant. And then you've got Litton Das, who has for a while sort of had a lot of potential, but now looks like he is peaking. He made a good 41 in that first game, and he's, what, 28? So he should be peaking for the next World Cup. He's captain for this series. I like the look of Afif Hussain as an all-rounder down the order. Ebadot Hussain is still continuing that really odd career. So people might remember that he averages about 56 with the ball in Test cricket still, despite taking an incredible six for to beat New Zealand in New Zealand. Was it at the start of this year or the end of last year?
Yeah, about that.
And then has come in, this is only his third ODI, but he took four for in the first game, another two or three in this game. He got Kohli in this game. So yeah, he kind of looks like a proper ODI quick. He's also batting at like number nine or number 10, which is a couple of places too high at least. And they've still, you know, the Fizz is still the Fizz. So there are a lot of good players there, and they are putting results together. But yeah, you do look at previous sort of times when it's also seemed like they're getting together, like the 2015 World Cup, they beat England to get to the quarterfinals, actually do pretty well against India in that quarterfinal, and then beat India at home as well shortly after that series, but didn't quite kick on again. Although I guess they did they get to the semi-final of the Champions Trophy? They did, didn't they? And then again, fell away. So they're, maybe it's harsh to say that they have just been slowly getting better. Those results have been improving. And actually, if you look at their performances in global tournaments and then the Super League, they do deserve to just maybe not even be, well, dark horses to win it, but not even dark horse for the semi-finals, just contenders for it, I think.
And yeah, I think it's worth reminding people just how close that 2019 World Cup was. Like, loads of teams had between three and five wins, and inconceivably any of them could have got that full spot that New Zealand ended up getting. In the county game, Paul Farbrace is the new head coach at Sussex. It's been a tumultuous time at Sussex on and off the pitch in recent times. Their former head coach Ian Salisbury, it's his third mention of the show, left under a cloud due to off-field reasons. There's a really good piece by Will McPherson in the Telegraph from a few weeks ago that kind of details what's gone on at the county. I guess it's just quite a big signing. Got experience in international cricket, quite a big personality, and you'd think that he's not just there to for Sussex to make up the numbers. Anyway.
Oh, I have a T10 update, actually.
Thank you.
Andre Fletcher, West Indies batter, was dropped four times in one innings, and that's in a T10 innings. So that's a very high drop catch to shot ratio. And that, yeah, perhaps sums it up.
The T10's over.
Is it? Honest? Oh, no. Who won?
T10's over. So the Deccan Gladiators beat the New York Strikers by 37 runs in the final.
Doesn't Moeen Ali play for the Deccan Gladiators?
If you know that, you're fired, I think.
If he does, he wasn't picked for the final. So do you want to hear what happened in the final?
Yeah.
So Deccan Gladiators were sent in by the Strikers.
Mm. You think they're regretting that now?
Yeah. they opened with Suresh Rayner and Tom Kolhatkar.
Great.
Both removed by Akhil Hussain. Andre Russell at three, bowled by Wahab Riaz for nine. I feel like you could come up with like some kind of computer code to come up with like a match report.
AI-generated T10 scorecard, exactly, yeah.
Nicholas Pooran, that's the one thing we know, is that he's hitting them well, and he did hit them well again, 40 of 23. And then David Wiesa in number five, 43 off 18, four sixes in that short innings. Rashid Khan was playing for the strikers, two overs that only went for 10. Riaz, despite taking that wicket of Russell, one for 43 off his two. And then in the chase, the strikers were blown away, really. Paul Sterling out for six. Mohammad Hasnain got him. Mohammad Hasnain took two for 14. Josh Little took two for four, opening the bowling with Hasnain. Left the strikers with far, far too much to do to get back into that game. So congratulations to the Deccan Gladiators.
So Percy Fenner didn't get a game in that one, did he?
Percy Fenner did not get a game in that one. Anyway, that is all we have time for today. A sub 50 minute show, which is excellent news for me. Thanks Ben, thanks Katia. We'll be back straight after the second Pakistan England test match next week. Podcast Network.